Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead in December. You won't need a telescope or fancy equipment, just bring your curiosity. We lucked out with an unusually warm November here in Boston, but I know old man winter is heading for my home and will be here any day now. Even so, December is one of the best times of the year to go stargazing. For one thing, the sky doesn't have all the humid air and haze that hangs around during summer. You step outside and the air just looks clean, and clean air makes the stars and planets easier to see. Then you factor in what this season has to offer overhead, which is a lot. The winter sky is adorned with some of the brightest stars, including the brightest, after the sun, of course, and it gets dark early, by 5 p.m. in most places. Heck, I sometimes try to sneak in a little stargazing before supper. So there are lots of good reasons to head outside after sunset. Ready? Let's go. The moon is full right off the bat on December 2nd, and again on New Year's Eve, December 31st. Now, we've gotten used to referring to the second full moon in a month as a blue moon. Hey, it was even a Trivial Pursuit question way back when. But that's not really correct. The phrase can be traced to the Maine Farmer's Almanac back in the 1930s. Dig deeply enough, and you'll learn that a blue moon actually refers to the fourth full moon in a celestial season, say from the fall equinox to the winter solstice. Call it what you will, but I'm sure that big bright ball on the 31st will help lots of revelers make their way around in the dark. And if you're ringing in the new year from Europe, Asia, or Africa, skies permitting, you'll see a very slight partial lunar eclipse that evening. By December 5th or 6th, the moon will be absent from the evening sky for a couple of weeks. New moon falls on the 16th, and in the days after that, it'll be a fattening crescent in the west until reaching first quarter on the 24th, Christmas Eve. Now, we say first quarter not because it's only 1/4 sunlit, but because it's gone about a quarter of the way around Earth in its orbit since new moon. Okay, enough of this lunacy. By early evening, only 5:30 or 6, the sun's already been down for more than an hour, and it's gotten dark fast. Like daylight itself, twilight is much shorter during winter months, so you can tell right away that there's plenty to see. But up above, the evening sky is still hanging on to some of the stars of summer. For example, look well to the upper right of where the sun set, about halfway up in the sky. That bright, icy white star is Vega, which is sometimes called the summer star because it rides high in the sky during the balmy evenings of July and August. But now it's low in the west, as if deflated by the oncoming cold. Catch it soon after dark, before it sets for good until next summer. It's time to get out the stargazer's toolkit. Hold your arm out straight and make a fist. That fist covers about 10 degrees of sky, and it makes a handy tool, no pun intended, for measuring distances between the stars. Above Vega, by about 1.5 fists, is a slightly dimmer star called Deneb. It forms the head of the Northern Cross, which stands more or less upright during the evening at this time of year. Do you see it? The cross is about 2 fists tall. This is what astronomers call an asterism, a pattern of stars, like the Big Dipper, that's easy to spot, but not really a full-fledged constellation. To the lower left of the cross is the star Altair, which together with Vega and Deneb make up the summer triangle. And well off to their left is the bright planet Jupiter, still hanging in there after many months in the evening sky. All those summer sparklers are being muscled out by the stars and constellations of winter, and there's no bigger or badder winter signpost than Orion the Hunter. To find him, turn completely around so you're facing southeast and look for him beginning around 7:30 or 8 over the eastern horizon. He's striding steeply upward with his shield held up toward Taurus the Bull, which is above him in the sky. He's always advancing on Taurus, who always retreats backward across the sky as Earth rotates. The main stars of Taurus have the shape of a V lying on its side. The brightest star in the V, marking the angry bull's eye, is the slightly reddish star Aldebaran. Now, maybe Orion hasn't climbed above your eastern horizon yet, or maybe your view low to the east is blocked by houses or trees. So now what? Easy! Look about halfway up in the east, a little more than 1 fist above Aldebaran, until you spot a fuzzy patch of light. This is the Pleiades, a tight little nest of stars. Sometimes they're called the Seven Sisters. If you've got decently sharp eyesight, you'll see that the six brightest stars of the Pleiades form a tiny Dipper shape. Now don't confuse this with the real Little Dipper, which is much bigger and located due north in the sky. Once Orion is well up, after 10 o'clock or so, look to his lower left, close to the horizon, for a curiously broad, squashed triangle of bright stars. The one closest to Orion is Sirius, marking the hunter's big dog, and the one farthest to the left is the planet Mars. Can you detect a hint of yellow or peachy coloring in Mars? We call it the red planet for a good reason. The rocks on its surface are tinged with rust. Late next month, Mars will be directly opposite the Sun in the sky. It'll rise as the Sun sets and remain in view all night long. Now, in between Mars and Sirius is the star Procyon, marking the little dog. Speaking of stars, on my calendar, December always gets two of them. One is for the solstice, the unofficial start of winter, which this year falls on the 21st at 12:47 p.m. Eastern Time. The other is for the Geminid meteor shower, which this year will be at its best on the night of Sunday, December 13th. If it's cloudy, Monday night should be good too. During a meteor shower, you'll see far more shooting stars than normal because Earth is crossing the orbit of a comet and plowing through a cloud of particles shed by that comet along its orbit. In the case of the Geminids, the comet is an object called Phaethon. Now, Phaethon is basically an extinct comet, one that's been heated by the Sun so many times that it's run out of gas, literally. The particles that Phaethon spewed into space are still hanging around, and every year, in mid-December, we plow right through them. We call this shower the Geminids because the meteors you'll see all seem to streak across the sky from the direction of Gemini. It's a little like rain hitting the windshield of a moving car. Even though you know the raindrops are falling gently from the sky, they look like they're coming from just one direction, right at you, and fast. It's the same thing with the meteor shower. You'll see shooting stars zipping everywhere across the sky, but trace those streaks backward, and they'll all seem to radiate from Gemini, which arches into view over the eastern horizon by 9 or 10 p.m. That's when this show of shooting stars gets underway. The later you stay up on the 13th, the more meteors you should see. Ordinarily, astronomers can count on the Geminids to give us a pretty good show, maybe one meteor per minute from a really dark location. Most people think of the Perseids, which come in August, as the best meteor shower of the year, but the Geminids are right up there, and you don't have to stay up until 3 a.m. to get a good view of them. While you're waiting for those Geminids, grab a pair of binoculars to look at the Pleiades, and if you want more sky-watching tips, check out our website, skyandtelescope.com. Me, I'm heading in for some eggnog. So until next month, I wish you clear skies.